Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5, Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Because that guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now... here's John Roy.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Back with you again for another edition of Homer Radio. Gotta love that, huh? Welcome, everybody, inside the playbook for Tuesday. John Rook here with you. Pat's coming off the 34-17 win over the Cleveland Browns, and, of course, everybody's now all up in arms because... oh, my goodness gracious, there's a chink in the armor. Fred is off the bandwagon, and all of a sudden now, Patriots aren't going to be good enough to go out on the road and beat the Dallas Cowboys. A Dallas team that, you know, well, first of all, and for those of you that have listened to the program for any length of time, over the course of the last 6 years, this being year seven that we've done this program, seven or eight, I forget. How many years have we done this program? Seven? We started in 2001.
Eight.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Just looking forward to next week.
Exactly. Just try to get through the day. That's exactly right. At any rate, this is the first time.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
It's the first time I think that I remember Fred ever coming off the bandwagon like that. Wow. Wow. Now, but if you've listened to this program for any other point in time over the course of the last few years, you know that I grew up in Texas, grew up in Dallas, actually technically in Fort Worth, but certainly as a Cowboy fan. And, love the Cowboys. I've always loved the Cowboys. You know, I had to kind of, you know, grin through gritted teeth, you know, when Jerry Jones and Barry Switzer and some of those guys were doing some of the things they were doing. But fact is that that was the team, and we all know that we root for laundry around here. We don't really root for individuals. You root for the uniform. And in that case, I've always really kind of rooted for the Cowboy uniform. So I'm watching the game last night. I'm thinking, there's no way. I mean, first of all, it was 24-13, I think, when I turned it on. Because I was going back and forth watching the Yankees last night get whacked again, which, by the way, certainly, you know, didn't make me unhappy. But then there was a part of me that wanted the Yankees to win simply because they were. Do you have the Who's Your Daddy one when Pedro was pitching? That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen on network television. And that includes all the sitcoms of the last few years.
I was there, so I didn't have it.
That was were you there?
Game seven.
Oh, you bastard! Really? No kidding. That would you have to tell me. You have to agree, though. That was one of the funniest things when they were yelling at Pedro coming out. Who's your daddy? After he had that infamous quote.
Pitcher number 41, Randy Johnson. Pitcher number 42, Mariano Rivera.
That was awesome. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Anyway, even though we're digressing here. Fact is that watching the football game last night, honestly, I'm thinking, wow, I can't believe Buffalo is doing this. And then, well, you know, sometimes it happens when a team is generally thought to be, you know, down and out. And nobody gives them a chance. And, you know, and certainly Buffalo would have to qualify a little bit in that category. And then Cowboys might have come in a little, as I like to call it, fat and sassy. And it happens. The Cowboys have an improving defense, but they're not there all the way yet. Tony Romo, like I said, oh, there goes another pick right there. He just threw number 8. You know, I mean, I've never seen anybody throw 4 interceptions and a half. Never seen it. Until last
8.
Night. Yeah, he was on his way to 8, that's for sure.
8.
But, you know, you have to give the Cowboys some credit. The fact is they end up winning a football game that they turn the football over 6 times and give up a kick return and they still win the game. It's amazing. So I guess in a sort of a roundabout way, I can understand why Fred thinking that, you know, the Patriots might have, you know, shown a little vulnerability this last week against Cleveland and the Cowboys, you know, coming off the win that they are. I tend to look at it the other way. And again, obviously, this is Tuesday. This is very early in the week. But here's how I kind of look at it, kids. The Cowboys, first of all, are on a short work week. All right, they are coming back home. They do get the benefit of the doubt that it's not a, you know, 3 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central time. It's a 12 noon Eastern time is what I'm trying to say. It's a 3 p.m. Eastern time game, Central time game. Get the time zone right, Rook. 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central is the kickoff this next Sunday. Thank you.
Four.
They've got an extra couple of hours to play with. It's usually a noon Central Time kickoff than a lot of the games they play in. And so they've got a few extra hours, even though it's not a night game. But it's still a short work week. They're coming off a relatively emotional win, a game that they had no right to win, a game that they thought they had lost until basically Buffalo and Trent Edwards shot themselves in the foot with that late pick. And even though they score that touchdown and make it 24-22, missed the two-point conversion, there's only 20 seconds left in the game, and then they recover the stinking onside kick, two plays, and then, boom, you get a 52-yarder. I mean, could it have been any more improbable? So, actually, you know, I think if they had lost that game last night, they probably are loaded for bear. And I would certainly have tended to agree more with Fred had the Cowboys lost last night. Now, you know, could the Cowboys cover the spread? Absolutely this week. I mean, this could be one of those one possession type games. You know, it certainly could be because the Cowboys, as I said, are improving defensively. But if Tony Romo is throwing two and three picks or more, the Patriots will shred them. So let's kind of wait and see. We'll let the week play itself out. By the way, before we get into this a little bit further here, obviously your emails are welcome. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in, hey, it's open and available to you. 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. In the program today, we'll kind of go through our recap and give you some of our thoughts on what happened and what transpired with Cleveland this week, look at some other news and notes. And then in hour number two of the program today, we'll have a special guest in studio. Well, Brian Lowe is going to join us. Not that he's not special, but he's going to bring Christina Acra from Totally Patriots, Patriots Today, with us. She's going to join us in the second hour. And for those of you that live in the area and have seen our Patriots Today programming, or you've seen her, you know, streamed on the website, the pleasure is all mine. But she's going to come in and talk a little with us in the second hour of the program today. So that's great. Outstanding that she'd take a little bit of time to do that. And she does a great job and certainly gives a little spice to the, shall we say, to the website and to some of the programming that is offered here. So that's coming up in hour number two of the program. Let me give you my first thoughts anyway on what I thought really kind of transpired. Disappointed? Yeah. I think so. I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that, you know, this football team had, you know, a bit of a downer, if you will, more than anything else. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're not going to be able to play at a Herculean effort for 16 weeks. It's just not going to happen. That having been said, you weren't sure that it was going to come at home to a Cleveland team that, you know, for lack of a better phrase, struggled for the most part. With the notable exception, I think, of scoring 51 on the board against Cincinnati. Now, I did see some things offensively from Cleveland that I liked. You know, shame for them that they lost Jamal Lewis so early in the game. I think that took a whole dimension out of their offense out. But I believe that they're another wide receiver, in addition to what they have with Braylon Edwards. They're another good-sized wide receiver away from being a very potent team on offense. And I also believe that even though, and I understand why Derek Anderson is the quarterback now. He's a big dude for a quarterback too, by the way. I didn't realize he was 6'7". But fact is, this is Brady Quinn's team. It's going to be Brady Quinn's team. And I feel relatively certain that as soon as Cleveland is sort of eliminated from the proceedings, that they'll turn the ball over to Brady. But, you know, they're 2-3. Cleveland has Miami this week, and Miami is just god-awful. I mean, that's, you know, has a new coach ever been fired in mid-season of his first year with the team? I'm thinking Cam Cameron could be a candidate because Miami has absolutely nothing going for it on either side of the football, and they probably just lost Trent Green, who they agonized over getting and failed to really pull the trigger on for much of the summer. And then they get him in, and the guy has another concussion, and this one could be career-ending. For his sake, I hope he decides to hang it up. That was a brutal hit that he got on the knee. I understand why, you know, there was so much controversy over it, thinking that, you know, Green was laying the block down. He was trying to, you know, cut the lineman down. And so this is what happens in the sport. But standing over him and taunting him after he's down on the ground like that was just, it's ridiculous. There has to be at least a little bit of a decorum on the field, even in the face of battle. And I, you know, fully expect a fine to be coming their way. But even though I'm digressing on that one, this is going to be a digression day. I definitely think so. There are a lot of things to nitpick over, kids. Okay, Nitpick Tuesday is here. This is what we kind of spend some of our Tuesdays doing. We've spent, you know, most of our Tuesdays, you know, going over, trying to find some of the dark lining in the otherwise silver cloud. Simply because, you know, we are trying to adhere to, you know, the T-shirt saying that went through the locker room, which, by the way, you heard here first about on Patriots Playbook last week. You know, the I eat it on the front and the humble pie on the back. And the shirt's done by Adalys Thomas. Well, plenty of humble pie to go around this week. So at least initially, our email question of the day to you should be, all right, what did you see bad? What did you not like? What can you nitpick over? What is correctable? What do you think? And this may be a better question for you today. What do you see as a prolonged problem? What is did you see something happen on Sunday that you think may take a little bit more time and effort to correct, to fix, to get right? Let's see what you think. You watch the game or hopefully listen to it or something. What do you think? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Now that you've had a couple of days to sort of digest it and listen to some of the opinions, I'd like to know what you think about it. That's what we do here on Tuesdays, Nitpick Tuesday. So let's pick the nits. Let's find the bad. Let's mix it in with the good. I would tell you that I do believe that, you know, I think Cleveland was a little bit better than advertised. I was impressed with their offense initially. I think that defensively they were doing some things that, to slow, if not outright confuse, the Patriots on offense. I thought the game plan they had was a pretty good one by Romeo Crennel, but my guess is they probably would like to have run the ball a little bit more had, you know, Jamal Lewis not gone out after the first play of the game. And so they were left with what they were left with. But I, you know, overall thought that their offense did move the ball surprisingly well on the Patriots' defense in spite of the interceptions. In spite of the sacks that were there, as, you know, the guys were talking about a little while ago, I mean, Bruschi came in with his two sacks. He was virtually untouched. There was clearly a blown assignment there somewhere. Sayo got his interceptions on tips, which is fine. Had to get your hands in the ball. Somebody's got to get the hand in the ball, and you have the presence of mind to be there and reel it in. Right place, right time, and that's sometimes it just happens that way. We saw some improvements. As we look at both sides of the story here, we did see some improvements, I think, in red zone defense for the Pats. They stopped a couple of trips down there, including the very last play of the game. But we also saw some struggles from the Patriots in red zone offense in converting the way that they had converted at least through the first 4 weeks of the season. So it was sort of a little bit of a give and take. By the way, funny story about the end of the game. You know, of course, it's 27-17 to the end. Cleveland has the ball. And... the Patriots had just scored and made it 34-17. So Cleveland's moving the ball down to try to get another cheapie, right? See if they can pull within 10. Of course, I'm sure many of you are aware that the spread for the game was 16 at kickoff. Maybe even been 16.5. So obviously it was going to take a 17-point victory to cover the spread. So if you had the Patriots, you were going to win at 34-17. And, of course, you ultimately did. But it was tough sledding there for a while because the Browns were moving, and they had the football, and it was fourth and goal at the there was a third and goal play at the 10-yard line. And there were 5 seconds left on the clock. And so George McGuan is the clock operator at the stadium. He sits two seats to my right in the broadcast area where we're located on about the 35-40 yard line. And I look at George and he looks at me and I said, "So George, is this going to be a 5 second play or what?" He goes, who knows, you know, it depends on what the play is going to be. And of course they throw an incompletion and there's still 1 second left on the clock. And so I'm looking at George and everybody's laughing about it, and he's like going, "Hey, you know, I got to call it straight, right?" And there's a group of guys sitting right in front of us, right outside the window, who are clearly, shall we say, had a little action going.
You know something? You suck.
Hey, a little action going. One of them turns around to George and says, "Hey, you let that clock run out, I got $100 in my pocket for you." Well, obviously, the guy probably had a little more than $100 on the line, otherwise I don't think he would have asked for that. But the only people that were really concerned over that last goal line stand from the 10-yard line were those, obviously, that had a little action going on in the game. Cleveland had scored, then it would have taken care of the spread, and they would have undoubtedly lost their wagers. But that is, of course, why they played the game. The Patriots held on. It was 34-17. So that was a little bit of a interesting, shall we say, Americana. Little slice of Americana, or a little Foxborough flavor for you before right before the end of the game was completed. Let's kind of look also at some of the other, while we look at the nitpicky items, let's also take a look at some of the positive items again, and we'll kind of go through this a bit because we don't, we're going to try to, run both sides of the street. It's not all Homer Radio, as Andy and Tom and those guys would think it is. We are going to try to look at things somewhat analytically here and call it as we see it. Fact is, I thought Sammy Morris had another pretty good game running the football. Did get over 100 yards again, had 102 on the ground. And so he has operated in very good stead in the absence of Lawrence Maroney. But then let's go to the flip side. What's up with Lawrence Maroney? Anybody else have the sinking feeling that maybe he's just not as durable as we hoped he might be? I realize that he had the whole shoulder thing, kept him out in the offseason, but the shoulder isn't the problem here. It's a hamstring now, and he's missed two games with a sore hamstring. And he's been inactive for both. In fact, he suited up last week against Cincinnati and was a late scratch. He didn't even suit up. I did not see him at all on the sideline suited up for Cleveland this week. Is it getting worse? He's had 2 weeks off, and it's gotten worse? I'm not real confident. Not terribly confident in his durability. I hope that I'm wrong and that he can bounce back and then some and make an appearance next Sunday afternoon against the Cowboys. But I think that's a sort of give and take there. Well, I'm really happy that a guy like Sammy Morris has responded, and certainly I think Morris is going to be a guy that will want to respond playing in Texas. I mean, he attended Texas Tech. He's from there, so I mean, I would think that he would be sufficiently motivated to play in front of the Cowboys and Texas fans, or Dallas fans in Irving this next Sunday. But the fact is that we're going to need two backs. I think most everybody realizes you need two good quality backs. And this is with all due respect to Kevin Faulk, but you have to have guys also that can go between the tackles as best as possible. And Maroney's going to be needed. And I'm beginning to think that maybe he's just a little bit too fragile based on what we've seen thus far. And really, that's all we can go on, is based on what we've seen thus far. A little bit of fragility involved there. So that's one thing that does sort of...
Fragile!
Yeah,
that must be Italian.
That does kind of concern me just a little bit, to be honest with you. So that's one thing I think to kind of look at. Think that positively speaking, you had a first career 100-yard receiving day for a guy like Benjamin Watson. And if they're going to pay more attention to the wide receivers, which they did give a little more attention to Moss on Sunday. It wasn't out of the ordinary, but, and it wasn't necessarily that Moss wasn't open. He was in single coverage a few times. I thought that Brady did not have his best day. He was off target. He wasn't near as accurate as he had been in any one of the previous four games this year. So there was a little more attention paid to Randy, but not a lot more. Not as much as maybe you would think by looking at the numbers. What was it, four catches for 60 yards or whatever it was? There was more opportunity for Dante Stallworth and certainly for a guy like Watson. So I think, having Benjamin Watson able to break out, that just creates another threat. And while we'd all love to see, I think, in theory, Randy Moss, have a 100-yard receiving game every game out and shatter the record for receiving yards and shatter the record for touchdown catches in a year and whatever, I think the fact is that the Patriots overall are still going to be better if no one knows what's coming. They know Randy Moss is a threat. Now you've got to be able to step out there and develop your other threats, and you've got to go to them at specific times during the game in order to make and keep defenses honest. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, it does to me. So if the ball's thrown to Stallworth, he's got to catch it. He had a couple of drops, and quite frankly, that was, they were inexcusable. You can't just drop the ball like that. Look the ball under your hand, and if you go straight down, great, but hold on to the doggone football. I believe that was one of the reasons why they kind of got rid of Rishay Caldwell, was it not? Couldn't hold on to the ball. So that's one thing you have to kind of look out for. But you have to develop those other sources. And so if Stallworth becomes a viable source, certainly Watson over the middle. You know what you have with Wes Welker. Jabbar Gaffney has been thrown to a few times. I think, you know, if and when you're ever, you know, fully able to get Kelly Washington out there, you see what you have with him, although Washington did return to the field this last week in special teams. There will undoubtedly be a decision made once Troy Brown is ready to return in a week or two. Somewhere in there. And I don't know if Washington, I said this a couple weeks ago, Washington could be the odd man out in this particular instance. But, again, time will only tell here. You just got to have, the ability to go with the other threats simply because you have to have, you have to be able to keep the other team's defenses honest. And so that's why I'm not unhappy with the fact that Moss didn't get quote unquote big yards or big scores and was glad to see a guy like Watson have the breakout game. Because this only makes your offense better overall. I think everybody pretty much understands that, right? I think that's pretty much par for the course. So, you know, so again, a little give and a take where that's concerned. Great to see other targets being thrown to and other targets offensively being a focal point, but not so good to see, A, Brady struggle again with some of his accuracy, and B, guys like Stallworth dropping easy ones. So there's a little nitpick. There's a little give and a little take, a little positive and a little negative in an effort to sort of, again, balance this picture out. I mean, when have we ever in the past really been upset over a 17-point win? I realize this is the closest margin that any team has been to the team thus far this year through 5 weeks. But, I mean, come on, 17 points. Spread was 16.5. Seems to me somebody actually got something right for a change. So I don't know that we should really look a whole lot into this, but again, that's what we do here. We sort of analyze and overanalyze and overanalyze again in an effort to sort of make it all make sense somewhere in our own, you know, little football brains that we have. So there's a couple of ideas for you in some negatives, nitpicks, and some positives as well between the running game and the passing game. We flip it over to the other side of the ball, and the fact is they were able to get some good pressure at times on Anderson, but I don't think it was consistent. I don't think that they had, you know, I mean, certainly where Teddy Bruschi's are concerned, I mean, those were just flat-out, you know, reads, and he was left unblocked. And, you know, hey, if they're not going to block him, you got to take the shot, which he did, and he came up big. And I think they also realized that, you know, Derek Anderson and his delivery for a guy who's as tall as he is, as big as he is back there, he doesn't come over the top with his delivery. So you notice when he was going back to throw, hands were up on defense, and they were able to tip a few and pick off, you know, their fair share as well. And so I think that was something that they learned from Anderson looking at tape and things that happened early on in the football game especially. Especially that first drive down there. They get down on the one-yard line to try to throw it. It gets tipped by Asante Samuel in the end zone, and Sale comes down with it in the back of the end zone. First time all year they've stopped anybody inside their 20-yard line. Got the hands up. So let's see. We applaud them for getting, you know, for taking advantage of the open lanes and sacking the quarterback, and yet the front four didn't get a pressure on the quarterback really for the first, or the front three. The rush, the down lineman. They didn't get pressure on the quarterback for the first time this year in 5 weeks. Linebackers, I thought, did a pretty good job overall. And when you consider Sale had the picks, Bruschi had the sacks. I know a couple of emailers were concerned about Adalis Thomas going down. And actually, Paul's correct. He's actually gone out for a few, you know, elongated periods, I believe, in almost every game thus far this year. It's just that this one, he required assistance to get off the field, which had his, you know, he got himself dinged up a little bit, and so they took a TV timeout, and you just noticed this one. But it wasn't the first time he's actually missed a portion of the game. And this just happens. I mean, this is one of the reasons why you go out and get the guys that you have. It's why you sign Junior Seau. It's why you let Eric Alexander stick around and Pierre Woods and some of the other linebackers. And, you know, Chad Brown, even though he's been inactive the last couple of weeks. This is why you have these guys around, because injuries happen. And we all know the Patriot way of doing things has been, they've been able over the last several years of success to plug guys in when injuries occur. Fortunately, nothing serious has happened yet to Adalis Thomas. But he is a man amongst boys, I think, out there defensively. There was some improved play by the secondary based on the, you know, the tip drill. And Randall Gay picking up the fumble and returning it for a touchdown at the end to provide the final margin of victory. Kind of ironic that the only other time he's returned a fumble for a touchdown happened to also be against Cleveland. So I guess he likes to play against the Browns, doesn't he? So some more give and take for you defensively. And I will give you one final, at least, observation of a nitpicky item here, at least at this opening stage of the program, that I think that, you know, while right now it really doesn't mean a lot, but I think it is something that could come back and haunt this team on down the line. And there is a glaring lack of consistency in the kicking game, specifically from the punter. And, you know, Chris Hansen is his average is not good. He had more of an opportunity to kick the football on Sunday. The first few weeks, he barely had a chance to kick, and when he did have a chance to kick, he was trying to play field position, so he never really had a chance to boom off a 40, 45-yarder because they were always trying to pin a defense in. So he's asked in that situation to pin a team inside their 20-yard line. And like I said, he was one of the leaders in the league in the last year or two in kicks inside the opponent's 20. It's one of the reasons why the Patriots, one of the reasons why they let Danny Boggart go and brought in Hansen at the end of the exhibition season. But now that he's had an opportunity to kick, you know, in their end of the field when they had some three and outs and had some struggles on offense, you need him. You need him to boom a few. And the ball, even though he gets good hang time on it, it just dies. In fact, two or three of the punts I remember specifically going out of bounds while they were still well in the air. So it was coming off the side of his foot. It wasn't a shank, but he's not placing it well. The hang time is good, but the distance is not. You're only getting about 35, 36 yards, 37 maybe, a kick, and you need to get 8 to 10 yards more than that. And if you're up against a team that is any better offensively than Cleveland was, and Cleveland's not a slouch on offense when they're healthy, you get anybody better you're going up against offensively, then you're going to be in trouble playing that field position game, and you're going to lose that battle. And so while right now it's not a big problem, and I'm certainly being nitpicky about it now, you cannot convince me that it hasn't crossed your mind yet. You're thinking, all right, well, we even talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we began nitpicking here on Tuesdays. And, I said, well, it's not really a problem because he hadn't really had much of a chance to kick. But now that he's had a chance to kick, we might have to revisit this. Potentially, we might have to revisit this. So there's some nitpicks for you. There are a couple of things that I think that you should probably look at. There are some ideas out there for you to chew on, for you to consider, and now I'd like for you to contribute to the program and let me know what little nitpicky thing you can come up with that you saw that you think could be corrected, that needs to be corrected, or, as I suggested a couple of minutes ago, come up with one of those nitpick problems that you think may be a little bit more problematic in terms of fixing. Is there more of a long-term issue in your mind? That's what I'm interested in finding out about now. Webradio@patriots.com, WEBRADIO, webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. The telephone number again is 508-543-7482. By the way, I realize that your team may have just played last night, but are there any Cowboy fans hanging on around here? Okay, love to hear from you. Talking to a Fort Worth native, born and raised, Cowboy fan since I was old enough to walk, even though I've worked for the Patriots for the last 15 years. Go ahead and ask me if I'm conflicted about Sunday. Well, I tell you what, I won't be because I know who I work for. But a lot of my family back home in Texas will be, that's for sure, because they know I work for the Patriots. And I think they have a New England Patriots fan club going on in Fort Worth. But my guess is when push comes to shove, they'll probably all go back to their Texas roots and root for the Cowboys. And I can't say that I necessarily blame them. But it's going to be interesting. And I'm glad that the Cowboys won last night because it does set up a great matchup between 5-0 teams. And obviously we'll jump into that a little bit later on here in the program. And we'll certainly delve into the matchups with the Cowboys on Wednesdays and Thursdays show this week. And get their conference calls and media members and such like that all hooked up for you so we can kind of break this thing down. Because you got two of the three teams in the NFL unbeaten. Three unbeaten teams left. Two of them will face off against each other on Sunday, and the Patriots are the one traveling to the home field of the Cowboys. So you'd have to say, at least on the surface, it doesn't look good. And then, of course, you have to consider, I think, you know, the Patriots against the Cowboys. And then let's see if the Cowboys can hold their own. Short work week, it's going to be tougher for them. I guarantee that. But my guess is once they start looking at tape, they'll realize that we better get it in gear. Otherwise, we could have our hats handed to us. And if we turn the ball over like we did against Buffalo, well, then just forget about it. But if we do have some Cowboy fans logged on and listening, I would love your perspective on your team at 5-0. Is it a good 5-0? Is it a mediocre 5-0? Is it a false sense of security at 5-0? There are a couple of games in there that I think you easily could have lost, including that one last night. So how good do you feel about that 5-0? Webradio at Patriots.com. All right, let's sneak in a timeout. We're going to get into some emails, and we welcome yours. Plenty of time to get into that today. Webradio at Patriots.com. Nitpick some of the bad things. Bring in some of the good things. Let's balance it out. Let's walk both sides of the fence. You don't want to sit on one right in the middle of the fence because then you get hammered from both sides, right? Pick a side. Let's go. Pick a nitpick, and we'll pick on it, right? And then we've got Brian Lowe and Christina Acra coming in hour number two of the playbook.
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots License Plate today.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday. Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Newman.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Newman!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the Revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
That song takes a little time to kind of get to, doesn't it? I know. Come on, who's on the train and who's not on the train? Let's go. Are you on it? Are you off it? I think Fred Kirsch is off the bandwagon. He's off the train this week. He says the Cowboys are going to win this thing. Let's hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, and you can call it 508-543-7482. Just kind of looking around at some other items from Week 5 around the league, I have to admit that the concussion that Trent Green took, the knee to the head, I got to admit, that was a brutal-looking hit. That was tough. That was tough to watch. I don't know how he gets up. Well, I mean, I realize he's up, and he was apparently fairly lucid after the game was over. I don't know how he goes back on the field. I mean, I think he's probably putting himself in unbelievable danger. But Travis Johnson was the name of the Houston Texan that was trying to come back and make a play, and Green tried to put a block down on him and cut him down right on the knees, and his knee hit him right in the pie hole, right, I mean, just or ear hole, whichever you prefer. And that's why Johnson got mad and stood over him and taunted him while he was down, because he thought he was trying to be, you know, he was being cut at the knees. And you can, I, when you look at it slow motion, you can certainly see, well, yeah, I guess why, I can understand why he has an issue. I definitely think I can understand why he thinks he has an issue, but you can't stand there and taunt over the guy. I mean, if he's down and he's not moving like he wasn't, you can't stand there and do that. You know, you want to go up to him afterward or whatever and say, hey, I got a problem with that, then I just think that was not the right thing to do. But, you know, hey, it's an emotional game, it's a violent game, and stuff happens, and you have to try to move on. But I tell you what, it just sucks to be a Dolphin right now. Sucks to be a Dolphin fan right now. I mean, Miami and St. Louis are the only two 0-5 teams in the league. How far the mighty have fallen. And I know there are very few Patriots fans that are losing any sleep over the fact that the Dolphins are 0-5 and have now Cleo Lemon as their starting quarterback. But, I mean, just like, wow. How does it go that bad, that far south, that quickly? You got to wonder. And like I said, you know, early, I mean, is this going to be the first year that you see a first-year coach dismissed before half the season's over? Wow. You had, hurt on Sunday for the Dolphins, Samson Satelli, who's their rookie center. He had a neck injury that they're not sure how hurt he's going to be. Safety Cameron Worrell out. In fact, I believe I read this week where the Dolphins have started a different safety every week. Wow. So they're pretty banged up, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. Miami gets to play Cleveland this next week. And by the way, who would have thought that Cleveland would have a legitimate shot of being 3-3 before they go into their off week? Let's give Romeo Crennel and the Browns a little bit of credit. You know, they're going to be competitive. And we talked a little bit about that, even spent some time at length talking about that last week. Fact of the matter is that, this might be a job-saving performance for a guy like Romeo, but looks like Cleveland is back at least toward being competitive. But the blow that Green took to his temple, that looked wicked. It really did. Another quarterback was lost in the NFL this last week, Jake Delhomme. Is going to have surgery on a strained right elbow. Just couldn't throw this week. Couldn't throw. So they're going to have, the football equivalent of Tommy John surgery. He's going to have ligament replacement surgery on his right elbow. And so now the Carolina Panthers, who were thought to be a preseason favorite in the NFC, potentially compete for the Super Bowl again. You can't like their chances. Not now. Certainly not now. David Carr, who they brought in from Houston, the once battered David Carr, is now the go-to guy. So I guess good for David, although you can make an argument now. I think that Houston actually might be at least as competitive, if not more so, than the Carolina Panthers at this stage. But Carr's got to move in. And I guess the backup now, depending upon who they might go out and try to find available this week, I guess there's always Vinny Testaverde, could be... Well, they've got an undrafted rookie in Matt Moore and Quentin Porter, a former Boston College product, on the roster. Or I guess he's on the practice squad. So Jake DeLome is out now for the Carolina Panthers. You know, the guys, the PFW guys were talking about toward the tail end of the program, talking about why, you know, and some emailers had also brought up the point why the overall caliber of play does not seem to be as sharp this year, maybe as in the last few recent years. And part of it is, you could probably, I guess, I tend to think that maybe that the talent that's coming in to take over is just not mature talent. I don't necessarily think it's because there's just not as much good talent out in the league, or there's not as many talented players in the league. I mean, first of all, the younger guys that are playing, they had to beat somebody out for their position. So if they're beating somebody out, then it tells me that, well, they must be doing something right. What I think is that you don't have consistency with these younger players. Some days they're going to be really good. Other days they're not going to be so. But teams have made the move toward youth in an effort to, you know, get everybody on the same page as quickly as possible and build continuity and cohesiveness and hopefully, you know, build wins. And so I would just tend to think that maybe the league is a little more immature than we have seen in the last few years. That really is it. I would also tell you that I think we're beginning to recycle some coaches. I mean, with all due respect to Wade Phillips, who's the Cowboys coach now, I think we all realize now why he is the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. It's a guy that Jerry Jones can, you know, push around. It's a guy that Jerry has on his puppet strings. I mean, really, let's call it like we see it. I think he's a good football mind. I think he's very good defensive tactician, although you'd have to say right now that they're struggling on defense, although they do have some speed, and the Cowboys did get a little bit better, and they've gotten a little bit better, I think, overall every week, but they're not where they need to be, I don't think, in order to be a true Super Bowl contender. But, you know, the NFC being what it is, the Cowboys might get that by default. Don't be shocked and surprised if we see this matchup again first weekend in February. Don't be surprised at all, because right now I think we're headed that direction. Again, with all due respect to the Colts, too, because the Colts, I think, are capable. But the Colts don't have the same defense that the Patriots have right now. Biggest thing the Colts have going for them right now is the fact that they get the Patriots at home. Biggest thing the Cowboys have going for them right now is they get the Patriots at home. These two games upcoming, this week and then on November the 4th, they're arguably the two toughest games on the Patriots' schedule this year. I don't think anybody will really disagree with that. There are a few others that will be problematic, and we've talked about that from here and there, but these are the toughest two because they're the two other – number one, they're the two undefeated teams along with the Patriots in the league right now. That's the first thing. Number two, they're the other two good teams right now. They put themselves head and shoulders above the others. And number three, the Patriots have to play both of them away. Tough. Tough to do. Very tough to do. Tough to look at. But the Cowboys are kind of the best team in the NFC right now, just almost by default, I think. The power rankings are all coming out in their various sources today. And, you know, certainly shouldn't come as any surprise that the Patriots are still up at the top of the list. The Colts are number two. The Cowboys are number three. They have the Steelers. This is the one on ESPN. They have the Steelers 4. They have the Packers 5. The Jags 6. Tennessee 7. Here's the team I think that the Patriots really are going to have to watch out for because they're going to be here in 2 weeks. The Washington Redskins. Redskins have already had their bye. I hate having the early bye, by the way. I think that's tough. By week 12 or 13, you are just your tongue is hanging. And if you've had any injuries at all, it's just very difficult. Very difficult to regroup. So I think if you know the dice are rolled and you get the early bye, I think you're at a disadvantage. But Redskins are going to try to dispel that. They're 3-1. They've already had their bye. They're the first team to have one, so they're going to have to play straight through. But I think that even though they've got to come here, I think the Redskins will be a bit more of a challenge now than say a week or two ago that I thought they would be. So I think that's a game you're definitely going to have to look at. But the Redskins are 8th right now in the power poll. And then the Ravens, and then the Seahawks at 9-10. So that's kind of where they bring things. The Patriots will be playing out of those top 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of those top 10 in the power rankings, remainder of the year. I think that definitely says something. It's a tough schedule that you've got. You win three of those, you're probably feeling okay about yourself. You win four of them, you've done an extraordinary job. Five is almost too much to ask for, isn't it? If you look at it from that vantage point. I mean, let's be real about it, right? That's a tough thing to look at it. And in the category of how the mighty have fallen, the Dolphins are dead last at 32. Rams are 31. And then in more recent past, the Saints, last year's dolls and darlings, they're 30th at 0-4. Wow. Jets aren't much better. The Jets are 28th. I had a chance to talk for a while with Pete Brock, former Patriot center, earlier today at a business function we had here at the stadium earlier this afternoon, and he still refers to him today as the dog-ass Jets. Some old habits are hard to give up. But that's what I like about these guys. You don't forget. You might forgive, but you don't forget. So that's really kind of how it boils down. Anyway, some thoughts on what's happening around the league anyway for a little bit. Let's get to a couple of emails. Lawrence, who's a Colts fan from West Lynn, Oregon, he says, I think Jimmy Johnson and the Cowboys brought in the style of play we have now in the NFL. The concentration by many teams has been to get players that are stronger and faster. That has contributed to the use of performance enhancement drugs and the lack of development of the fundamentals. Let me think about that for a second. Concentration by many teams has been to get players that are stronger, faster. Well, I think you have to realize that the natural evolution of things, Lawrence, is that players are going to inevitably become stronger and faster. Training techniques are better. Diets are better. Let's face it. A 300-pound lineman 20 years ago was considered fat and out of shape. Now, if you don't have 300-pound guys on your line, you're weak and you're ineffective. I would also argue that, because of the way that teams have spread offenses, and you're going to see this more and more now, that the way that the offense has developed, it's forced teams to literally to be able to survive. It's forced teams to be faster on defense because they've got to go sideline to sideline and fill the gaps much more quickly. So I don't know that it's stronger and faster is an inevitability. We're never going to go back to slow and not talented or, big and slow and dumb and fat and stupid and all that stuff. We're not going to that stuff. Performance enhancement drugs have, I think, in the past, and I guess this is probably where you're coming from, certainly have enticed players, I think, to get bigger, stronger, faster, more quickly without doing the requisite, no pain, no gain. That I would agree with. Lawrence continues by saying, what you see from the Patriots is a deep commitment to the fundamentals and less concern with bigger, stronger, faster. Well, they're still concerned over bigger, stronger, faster. But you are correct when you say a deep commitment to the fundamentals. That's why most games you see the Patriots, not commit many turnovers, many penalties. That's why, this team is committed to taking care of the ball and to not beating itself. And except for the rare occasion when, the hinges come off, Patriots are usually, not only are they in the positive category, they're in the plus category in turnovers, but they're usually below the opponent in penalties and penalty yardage because of their commitment to fundamentals. He says, I'll wait a couple of weeks before I chime in on how the Colts will beat the Pats for the fourth straight time. I'll let you guys handle all the romosexuals on the Dallas bandwagon this week. Fair enough, Lawrence, but we'll look forward to hearing from you in a couple of weeks. And that ought to be a doozy in Indy. There's no doubt about it. Jimmy says, Fred's going with the Cowboys. Make sure he's in a Pats jersey when he goes to Dallas and rent a convertible. Yeah, he should rent a convertible. No barbecue for him if he's going to pick the Cowboys. Here we go. Steve says, they were talking about Peckerwoods. Guys thought you might glean understanding from this from Wikipedia. Peckerwood, pejorative slang term coined in the 19th century by southern black Americans to describe poor whites. That's right. Blacks saw blackbirds as a symbol of themselves and the woodpecker as a representation of working-class whites. They consider them loud and troublesome, like the bird, often with red hair similar to the bird's red plumes. This word is still widely used by southern blacks to refer to southern whites. Well, I don't know about you, but I've definitely called a guy Peckerwood in my life. Peckerwood. But it's true. It's a largely southern term. Just so now that you know, and I'm glad we brought all of that up to snuff here an hour after it happened. But nevertheless, like I said, we do read the emails here. Andy in Vermont says, oh, no, they only won by 17 points. The end must be near. And he writes in sarcasm. Did you expect Romeo's team to not play tough? If anyone knows the Patriots, it's Crennel. He knows how Bill Belichick game plans and what the Patriots try to take away from teams. Plus, he has his own defensive mind and seems to have the Browns going in the right direction. Well, I think in a roundabout way, Andy, I'm right there with you. I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt rather than really criticizing the Patriots for any lackluster performances. Like I said, you know, we nitpick on Tuesdays here, but I think you have to give your fair share of compliments and kudos to the Browns for being prepared, for having a decent game plan. They just don't have the overall quality or caliber of player yet, nor do they have the depth yet in order to be in the Patriots category. But it would appear, and what's Romeo in his third year, I think there? Yeah, I think through his third year. It would appear that he's got that team finally headed in the right direction, even just based on what we saw on Sunday. So I thought it was interesting. We spoke with Steve King from ClevelandBrowns.com last week when he said that, they would never think, honestly, you know, even though there was rumors about Romeo and his job being potentially on the line this year if this team struggled. He said, oh, no, they don't ever want to go. They don't want to go back down that route again and start all over from square one and be like the last 3 years didn't exist. You know, they definitely want to, you know, to let this thing play itself out and give him a chance to create something. And they're not going to pull the plug on this. So that sort of answered a question. Is his job on the line still? Apparently not. Now, then again, if they don't win another game the rest of the year, then that might be reevaluated. But it would appear, just from what we saw on Sunday, that's not going to be the case. In fact, I can easily see the Browns, you know, beating Miami this weekend and then going, like I said earlier, into their off week at 3-3. And at 3-3, they're still pretty much kind of in the thick of things. They're only a couple of games out of the league in the division, out of the lead in the division. So, you know, I don't think anybody thinks of this team as a playoff team, but fact is they'll be competitive. They would certainly have a shot, I think, at winning 6, 7, 8 games, and that would be a step in the right direction, and that gets it going. So we'll give some credit. Well, credit is due to Crennel and the Browns more so than take away the Patriots. Although, like I said early, guys, it's pretty clear to see this was not a standout, sterling effort by the Patriots compared to the other four games. This was a step back. Accuracy wasn't there on offense. There was some softness to the defense, at least between the 20s, although they did get a little stiffer, I think, in the red zone, as we talked about. But I guess we'll probably learn more as to whether or not that was more so Cleveland and their game plan as opposed to the Patriots just sort of being lackluster. We'll learn more this week when they go up against the Cowboys, I think. I tend to think, right after the game on Sunday, I'm thinking, wow, they really kind of stunk it up today and got lucky. But now that I've had 2 days to let it, you know, kind of sit and stink a little, you know what? I'm thinking a little bit more that I think we have to give a little bit more credit to Cleveland rather than just say, hey, the Patriots, just they got away with a stinker. They did to an extent, but it wasn't all the Patriots being, you know, soft or poor. Andy says, honor the boys in Big D. If Tony Romo coughs it up even half as many times next week, the Patriots should win going away. I was watching last night and saw an AFC team that's really not that good, almost kill the best team in the NFC. Somehow the Cowboys pulled one out of the rear. I really believe that shows the strength of the AFC. Yeah, but again, I think you have to realize that there's just overall not that big of a difference between teams that are ranked down in the 28 to 32 range, down in the bottom half of the league, bottom third of the league, as opposed to teams in the upper tier. I really don't think there is. There's more and more parity each and every year in the league, and I think that may have something to do with the perceived notion that there isn't as much overall talent in the league. I think it has a lot to do with the parity. I think guys are just hitting on other guys and whacking each other around, and I think anybody's capable of making a good play, capable of making a big play, and capable of winning a game each and every Sunday. And this is what the NFL wants. Now, it did take the Cowboys playing fairly poorly, and Romo in particular playing fairly poorly, to keep Buffalo in the game. But Buffalo was they were totally gacked for the game. They were pumped. They were jacked. You know, first Monday night game in, what was it, 13 years. So, I mean, you know, you remember what it was like around here when we had our first Monday night game in forever. People were through the roof around here. Fans were nuts. And they still get nuts, though, even though we're a little bit more used to it now. We're starting actually to act like we've been there before, which I think is a step in the right direction, to be honest with you. I think you can understand the emotion. The players got caught up in it. And as we talked about earlier, they've been besieged by injuries and setbacks. And so, you know, Buffalo is they're two hairs away from being 3-2 instead of 1-4. I mean, you know, they lost the opener to Denver on a last-second field goal. They lost last night on a last-second field goal. I mean, they are two hairs away from being 3-2 and being a couple of games out of the lead, not only in this division, but being right in the thick of things in terms of, you know, looking at a potential wild card. The Buffalo's not that bad. Those guys play with emotion. I think Trent Edwards has done a respectable job, better than even respectable, in backing up Lossman at quarterback during his injury time. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to be a very good back in the NFL. And even though they lost Peerless Price for the year, as it turns out, again, another one of those injuries, the receivers they have are still good. Aaron Schobel is one of the best defensive ends in the league. Just ask Matt Light that question. So, I mean, you know, Buffalo's got a lot of things going. Right now, such as it is, they're the next best team in this division. Jets are awful. Miami's worse. You can certainly make an argument, and it may not be much of an argument, that the Patriots currently reside in the worst division in the NFL. We may spend some time kind of thinking about that and talking about that later this week. We may have to take a look at that simply because of the way that the other teams in the division are playing. It's just, it's like next to ridiculous. Luis says, John, hope you're doing fine. I am. Thank you, Luis. He says, which division is worst? The AFC East with New England? How about that? I swear I didn't look at this, Luis. And the three dwarfs or the AFC West who have the mighty Raiders in first place? That's actually a very good question. Right now, I'd have to say that I believe that the division overall, that the Patriots are in the worst division. Because I think their bottom team is just god-awful. And the Jets are just barely better than that. And like I just got through saying, I think Buffalo is certainly better than 1-4 will indicate. Like I said, they're two hairs away from being 3-2. So I think they're a little better than what they've played. I don't think the Jets are as good as how they've played. The Jets should have won that game against the Giants, and they gave up 21 unanswered points at the end. How does that happen? And you're basically, even though you're the visiting team, you're playing in your home stadium. Giants are not good. They're overrated. They're not good. They're not good defensively. They're inconsistent at best on offense, and the Jets got hammered. So, you know, I would say that even though the Raiders are in first place, I think the Raiders are not as bad, Luis, as once feared. I don't think Denver is very good. I think San Diego is still struggling to work, you know, the new coaches into the mix, although they certainly showed signs of coming back strong this last weekend. And I don't think Kansas City is very good. But I think even the worst team in that division, which right now may be Denver, I think they're certainly better than Miami, and that's why I would give the edge in terms of worst divisions. I would give the edge to the AFC East over the AFC West, at least at this stage. But I think that's a question we're talking about. I'm glad you brought it up. Thanks for the email. Let's move on here. Let's see if we can squeeze a couple more. We'll break at the top of the hour here, and then we'll bring in Brian and Christina. This one comes from Diane. Bridgeport, Connecticut. Thank you, Diane. She says, I don't know whether you got this. Okay, we'll see. I got it now. She says, one stalwart. Oh, question response to John wrote because he asked the question, what could the Patriots do to improve? Thank you. She says, hi, John. One stalwart catches the ball. He is a good runner, but am I overly concerned with his ability to be a reliable receiver? He seems to have difficulty catching the football if he needs to look down. Does he have problem following the football? Does he need glasses? Question that tries to put... Oh, I'll get to that one in a second. I don't know that he needs glasses, but I would say what he's – I think because he's been, Diane, almost an afterthought in the offense in the first 4 weeks, I think he realizes once now that his number has been dialed a few times, I think he's probably a little over-anxious, and so my guess is he's ready and anxious to turn it upfield and make some gains. I think that's a little bit of the you know, you see a guy like Randy Moss who lines up beside you and he does well. Well, you don't want to pale by comparison. So I think he's anxious to get out there, and I think, quite frankly, he's forgot to look the ball into his hands and forget some of the fundamentals in an effort to make a big play. I don't think he's unreliable at all. I just think he's overly anxious, and I think all he needs to do is just settle down a little bit. And, again, you hear this trite and worn and tired cliche, he's got to let the game come to him and the football come to him. Sometimes you can get yak, the yards after the catch. Sometimes you can't. You know, just catch the football first, then worry about the yak, and then we'll see where we go. And I really think that's his only problem. I don't think he's unreliable. She says, a question that tries to put the concern into perspective. Of the total number of incomplete passes that Brady has thrown, how many were to Stallworth? Well, that's interesting. I don't know that I have that number available to me. I'd probably have to go through the play-by-play to see if I could actually dig that number out. I don't know that it would be a majority. I'm sure that there are a few. I mean, he dropped what that I can recall? A couple? Maybe a couple? That's what I'm thinking. On Sunday, but, I mean, Brady had, like, what, 16 incompletions. So, honestly, I don't know that it would be an overwhelming majority, but some good thoughts, Diane. Appreciate that. Let's also then, let's see if we can sneak in one more here before we get to the top of the hour. By the way, your emails are still welcome all the way through the program, webradio@patriots.com. And if you have some questions as well for Brian or for Christina, fire them off. Here we go, because we're going to bring them both into the program here in a moment. This one comes from Chris in Orlando. It says, the Dallas Cowpokes are hosting.
How you
Mets.
Doing?
Thank you very much. Let's think about this. Cowboys had scored 151 points before their game on Monday night. Bills had scored a whopping 41 points in their first four outings. This sounds like a butt-whipping waiting to happen. The Cowboys almost got beat. The Cowboys can suck so bad against a team that couldn't really score. What are they going to do against a team that'll hurt you as soon as you make a mistake? The Patriot defense, they're all healthy, ready to make plays. Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the game. The receiving corps making big plays all over the field. Tony Romo threw two interceptions in 87 seconds last night, not to mention the other mistake made by both teams. This game should have been a rout, not one with a last-second field goal. I won't argue with that one, Chris. Cowboys should have killed them, but they didn't. And we all know that mistakes are the great equalizer on the football field. And I will tell you this, that if the Cowboys make the same type of mistakes, maybe not the same number, but the same type of mistakes, the Patriots will make them pay, and that will turn what could be a close game into something that could be another one of those 34-17, 38-14 variety-type games. We'll get into some of that. All right, a timeout to take, and then Brian Lowe and Christina Acra from, Patriots Today. They're going to join us. If you've got questions, fire them off. All-knowing, all-telling, right here inside the playbook.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything. Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the game with the greats. Where will you be?
When you got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Miami, South Beach, bringing the heat,
Yeah, that's just for you. That's absolutely just for you. It's hour two of Patriots Playbook, and we welcome into the program Brian Lowe and Christina Akram.
Hey, how you doing?
From Patriots Today. How are you guys? What's happening?
Terrific.
You're beautiful. Fantastic.
How are you?
Wonderful. Christina, it's finally great to get a chance to get you to come in here and visit a little bit and find out a little more about you. Now, for those that are uninitiated and may not have seen Patriots Today, I'm going to let you go through the spiel because, Brian, obviously we do this every week when he comes in on Tuesdays and we kind of break down the game. We go over some of the good stuff.
Welcome to Toyota's Patriots Today, brought to you by the Toyota Tundra.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christina Akra. It's Friday, the Patriots' last day for the Browns. We're talking about
leaving no stone unturned is one Gary Gradecki, huh?
He's
rolling
the open.
Look at that.
Ready to go.
Look
that
at that.
The open, yes. All you have to do is log on, patriots.com, and it's daily. Mm-hmm. You can find me and Brian daily giving an update on the team. We have interviews. We have players in the latest news stories, stuff from the locker room, mm-hmm. press conferences.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
That is the weekly, more than once a week, soundbite that Gary always
That's
drops
usually
in for
your
me.
Greeting.
Especially for me, right.
Especially when the show is known as Patriots Video News.
Right, when it was Patriots Video News and I was the only on-air person.
Make sure you tell your friends you heard it on PVN.
There you go, circa 04, 05.
That was that Brian
that was
Lowe?
Him. Yeah.
How
that
many
was
years
Brian?
Ago?
That was before he hit puberty.
Wow.
Right. That was when
I didn't sound like you.
I was hosting the show when I was 9 and 10.
You've been here that long. He's a vet. I learned from Brian.
I don't think the Patriots will change their approach.
That was not me, Christina. That was one Paul Perillo, who you know as well.
Wow.
That was a good one. Like I said, Gary's always prepared.
He totally is. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the program again for those that might not have seen it and how it came to be that, you're anchoring the show and trying to move things along and feature the players and what the show's a little bit about.
Well, I think the main thing is we bumped it. We extended it to about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. We're hitting daily. And they just decided, it needs a host, something to keep it flowing. Brian adds so much content. We just wanted to add a little bit more segments, I guess, more information, more fun stuff. We've added some features and things like that. The players come in. Paul Perillo adds his analysis. And it's been a lot of fun. We've done a lot with it so far, and it's just getting better and better, I think.
So it's just kind of developed a little bit from what it was, at least initially.
Well, it's
right?
really evolved in a lot of different, from a production standpoint and graphics and all that. But really, content really... I mean, at least for the two of us, is really what it's all about. And we're doing, so many different features. I mean, the daily news covering the team is a staple, and that's what we're always, always doing. But every week we have a player come in that Christina talks to, and we sort of feature. We have some offbeat sort of topics, like we get Christina's Acro weather forecast every Friday for the site of the next game. You get that, John?
Get it.
Acro
weather. Nice.
For some reason, the powers that be think it would be a good idea for me to express some of my opinion. I don't know why, and I don't know what that sound effect was in relation to?
AccroWeather.
Oh, the weather. Thunder. Oh, thunder. Okay. Okay.
Come on. I'm a newsie, so
right.
I mean, I understand
that.
AccroWeather.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm. You know, we've got. I have a lowdown segment every Friday, John. You know, not sure why, but they want me to give some of my opinion, so why not? And you know, features. We got a lot of features.
Just
and Christina.
Good entertainment. That's sure. all. Absolutely. Good entertainment.
that's right. We're just here to entertain. And you know, so
we're all
really
entertainers.
We've evolved. We've really evolved into what really is a full-fledged TV broadcast. It happens to be on the internet. It's also on Comcast On Demand if you're in Massachusetts. But it whereas in the past when it was first developing, it was more of an internet video show. Now it's a TV show.
And it was
really
around, how short or long
oh,
was it?
Oh, you know,
about
it was five to 8 minutes a day.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
now it really is like a TV show that you just happen to be watching on the internet. And that's sort of the direction it's going in. It's a lot of fun to do. And obviously, there's no shortage of storylines when the team is 5-0 and has some of the best players on the in the league and doing as well as they are. So we have fun with it. And, you know, hopefully people are enjoying it,
right.
especially if they don't have. You know, some of the media outlets, if they don't live in the New England area,
that's
a great
why
way
we
to...
want them to come to the
exactly.
Patriots Football exactly. Network right here on Patriots.com.
And Christina's addition in June has catapulted the show from where it was to where it is now.
How so?
Well,
yeah, how so, Brian? Please explain.
Can you turn off my mic now? no, Christina is she's terrific, and we'd love to hear a little bit about
Thank
her
you.
Background as well.
Really? Okay.
But no, she's doing a great job. You know, she actually was a Dolphins fan, grew up down in Miami. Her dad is a Dolphins
season
fan.
Season ticket holder.
Is a
yeah.
season
yeah.
He's a current season ticket holder?
He has been for over 20 something years, I think. Yeah, so
he's the one.
Needless to say, yeah, I've been
he's
a Dolphins fan.
He's the
yes.
one.
Strictly business though. Strictly business,
so,
right?
So right. her ability
I got that one.
Her ability to adjust from, you know, Dolphins-centric life to a Patriots-centric life has been flawless. However, it's October 9th and the first snowfall of the year, unless I'm mistaken, has not yet come. So we'll see what happens at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
So the background then, where were you working before you came up here to New England? And or was it down in South Florida? Or?
Yes, it was okay. in Florida. I was doing a show for the University of Florida called Gator Zone that was on the Sunshine Network.
Yeah,
it was an original
I've seen
show.
That show.
Yes.
That's why you look so familiar, because
really?
I've actually seen that. Yep.
Oh, okay. I did.
Absolutely.
Same kind of thing.
LSU.
Hey.
Oh, whoops. Oh, sorry. You're a Gator. Right. My bad.
Don't even get me started on college football. We'll go
oh,
there.
Oh, maybe now that she said that, maybe we will
hey,
get started on college
whoa,
football.
Now, wait,
this is
great football team. They haven't lost in a long time.
Oh, listen, I'm glad you hear that because I'm a big college football guy, too.
Okay.
I went to Texas.
Oh,
so,
okay.
see, so thank you very much. So even though we sucked this year, we may have to bring you on for a college football segment
that
every
week. That would be
weekend.
Fun, yeah.
See, that would be fun, huh? She could talk a little Gator. Could get a little Longhorn thing.
That's
good.
Right.
All right. Well,
yeah.
We're going to talk about that. So you work for Gator Zone.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, how long have you actually covered football?
I did Gator Zone for about a year.
Okay.
And that was basically right
did
after.
Did you go to school? No?
I did. I went to University of Florida.
Okay.
Graduated, worked with Gator Zone.
Gotcha.
And next thing I knew, well, I did a little bit of in-between stuff. And this is basically my next best step right after
cool.
Gator Zone. So it's,
very cool.
I did with that. I actually did several sports. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
football mainly. I did, you know, tennis, golf, everything. So
do you know Billy Donovan?
I have met Billy Donovan.
Okay.
Donovan,
yep.
yes.
He's a friend.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great basketball program.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's, you know, win a couple
you
of
know.
National championships.
Eh, yeah.
Yeah. Back to back. Yeah, okay.
Let's
yeah,
not go overboard.
Right.
I mean, let's.
I was there for all of them, so yeah,
right.
big fan.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So you've come to New England. You bring in your talents, and we're talking some football and try to create this piece that you have. So I've been dying to know what you think of this football team compared to what you've been to in the past.
It is really unbelievable the difference. First of all, I think down where I'm from, it is a big college football oriented region. Being from the South,
mm-hmm.
that's all the diehard fans are for one college or another, and you don't really get that with the Dolphins and other pro teams down South. So when I came up here, it was really unbelievable to see just New England in general across the board, how the fans are just unbelievable for
right.
every sport. And it's really been fun and interesting. It's opened up a whole new aspect of professional football for me, and what better team to cover than the New England Patriots to start off. So I'm really enjoying it. It's been a good time.
Very
talk
cool.
about a different – I mean, some people might not even realize we have the fourth-ranked college football team in the country right down the street.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even know it. Or I mean, the difference must be staggering down there, like you were saying. I mean, when Florida is
well, you're
one,
expected
10,
to be
20...
number four in the country where she's from.
Right.
You, that
right.
is expected.
Right.
It's expected where I'm from, too.
Right.
Here,
right.
you're still playing behind the Patriots, Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins.
Right. It's such a pro town, and right. And that's where the focus is. But, no, it's interesting getting the different perspectives.
Yeah, it's really great. And, I mean, you know, growing up with the Dolphins, you didn't really ever see that. And it's cool that it's kind of sad I was missing out on it, but it's really cool to add that perspective.
Were you always a Dolphin fan?
I was. I went when I was younger. I went with my dad, went to the games until it got brutally hot.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
You really won't have that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Not too bad. No.
Yeah.
Bring the parka.
Yeah, yeah right?
No. Buy the parka first.
Yeah.
First of all, buy
the parka
yeah.
and then,
yeah.
then wear the parka.
Yeah.
And then you'll be that weather's right around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you obviously have at least a little working knowledge of the Patriots because you've probably seen them play a lot. And obviously everybody knows that there's that AFC East rivalry thing going between the two, well back to even probably beyond Squish the Fish back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So that whole thing, you know, going on between the two franchises. So you probably now are perplexed as to what's going on in Miami. I mean, this team is one of two 0-5 starts, and I was talking about it a little bit early in the program, and I'm like, is Cam Cameron going to be the only coach in the history of the NFL to come into a brand new team and get fired before the halfway point in the season?
Fired before he ever wins even
before
a single
wins
game.
A game.
Ooh, that's an interesting point. Well, we were just in the office on ESPN.com, and you know, obviously the Patriots are ranked number one, and Christina was just like, oh, where are the Dolphins? Scroll down.
Keep going.
And they're at 32. There they are.
Yeah.
That's a really unfortunate situation. They you know, losing their quarterback. They're, you know, obviously hopeless in the division, but you just can you win a game? You know, that's and not winning this past
think
game.
Think of how tough that
Houston.
Must be to go to work for those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Think how tough that really is to get up and get going.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally have to put on the horse blinders, I think, and try to ignore everything, which means including radio, TV, Internet, all of it, because it's the only way you can focus on trying to as you just said, win a game.
Mm-hmm.
And now you haven't had that kind of a problem here in talking to these guys because right now this team is in a extreme self-confident mode. So let me ask you, because you know you guys are obviously the ones in the locker room and you're the one, you know, interviewing these players on the show, Christina, but you know, do you sense overconfidence? Do you sense complacency?
Oh,
do you sense anything like that at all?
Not overconfidence, not by any means. I think they're having fun and they're enjoying it, and that's another aspect when you're winning, as opposed to a team that's completely losing. It probably remains just a job to go to work every day, but these guys, you could definitely tell they're having a great time and they work hard and there's a reason why they're winning, but I don't think they're overconfident at all. I mean, especially with the whole humble pie thing going on and on.
That was pretty cool, by the way.
It was cool.
It was a great concept.
Yeah.
And you know, I think they still have that, you know, core group of veterans. And obviously, year by year, you lose some of them, whether it's the Willie McGinnis and, you know, guys like that. But they still have this group of guys who have been here not just during these three Super Bowl years, but some of the poor years as well. You know, Brewski, you know, Troy Brown were around for some pretty bad years. You know, maybe not the 2-14 years of the early 90s, but, you know, some non-playoff years. So I think they have the perspective of both, you know, both sides of it. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Dolphins. How do they come to work every day? And I've been lucky enough that I started covering this team a couple weeks before the 2003 season. I've had some, you know, I've never seen a team start out 0-5 and what their demeanor is. And, you know, hopefully I don't have a chance to do that. But I think that there's some, you know, the expectations here are high, but they really stick with that. Hey, let's, you know, last week as they were getting ready for Cleveland, if anyone asked them, hey, you know, showdown looming with the Cowboys coming up. No, the next game's Cleveland. That's what they focus on. And the humble pie, you know, storyline last week just epitomized that, I think.
Let me get your thoughts then also on the game this last weekend, because I know there, you know, my initial reaction was after the game was over, well, you know what, they didn't play that well, talking about the Patriots in particular. And now that I've had a couple of days to let it kind of sit and stew, I think I'm more willing to give a little more credit to Cleveland and Romeo in particular. I think Cleveland's offense is pretty good. I think they missed Jamal Lewis, but I do believe they would have liked to have had his capabilities in the backfield where they could keep the ball away from the Patriots offensively a little bit and let him pound the middle. I mean, he had one carry, 11 yards, and then he's out. He's out with, what was it, an ankle, I guess, right?
I think so, yeah.
So, I mean, that was a weapon they didn't have at their disposal. But I thought the way that they kind of went about scheming things, I think we have to kind of give them some credit. So was it more so Cleveland, or was it maybe the Patriots just not, you know, playing up to snuff? What do you think?
Well, it's certainly all relative when it comes to the Patriots. You know, the Patriots played poorly, but, you know, 31 other teams would love to play this poorly and double up on the other team. I give Cleveland a lot of credit. I think that they, you know, they played tough. They were, you know, they fought and they, you know, they did a good job. Let's face it, they're, you know, their quarterback is, he's not a rookie, but this is really his first opportunity. And, you know, a Patriots defense and a Bill Belichick defense feasts typically on a quarterback like this. And when he didn't have the advantage of a strong running game, you know, that certainly hurt him. They certainly had some interceptions, but, you know, they were fighting and clawing till the end. And I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised that Romeo Crennel's team would be the one that would be the first ones to give the Patriots a good fight. I mean, it was a 10-point game in the final minutes. So, you know, I think, you know, the Patriots, you know, they came off a Monday night road game, and maybe there's a little something to say about that. Now, granted, they started off the game fairly well. I mean, they drove down, so I don't think they came out rusty by any means, but, you know, there's a, you know.
But you know what? Those first plays are scripted for the most part.
Those first plays are scripted, right.
So they kind of knew what was coming, and I could see them kind of settling back into, okay, now we're into kind of the long haul mode, and I could see where that could be a little bit of a difference, which is also why I think they should do pretty well at Dallas, because Dallas has got the short work week this week. So,
right.
I mean, what did you think, Christine, in terms of comparing what you saw with that team on the field this last week and what you saw the previous four?
There was definitely, I mean, the players even say a lot of mistakes that were made, and it goes along with the staying humble thing. They're going to be the first ones to call themselves out, you know, if they had a bad play here or there. And they even said, you know, by no means was it a big game. It was still a big win, which is phenomenal to think that a team can have a you know, an off day and still win by, what, 17 points.
Yeah.
So they will definitely be the first to say that they had plenty of mistakes. But also Belichick did say, you know, in his press conference the other day that Cleveland definitely, you know, figured some things out and gave them a little bit more of a challenge, though.
They were the first ones to put a little more into stopping Randy Moss.
That's true.
And they did a decent job of that. But as Romeo Crennel said, and as some of the other players said, you know, if you don't die by Randy Moss, you die by someone else.
Pick your poison, yeah.
Pick your poison, essentially.
Well, we can see where it would have been a lot worse had Dante Stallworth been able to hold on to a couple of balls.
Yeah, and he had a great, you know, that touchdown. It wasn't exactly a scripted play like that. They everybody's throwing water my way, but I got some right
just,
over here.
Just the soda out of the right. bottle right there. There you
there
go.
You go.
It was
then,
a great
then
individual
Then you can burp
effort.
On the air like Dan Dierdorf did.
Well, he apparently denied it.
Did you guys hear that?
I didn't, but he apparently denied
that?
It.
Gary, do you have that? Play it.
I erased it.
Oh,
come on!
I'm shocked you don't have that.
Oh, that's a stunner. You're going to have to go looking for it now. Yes, Dierdorf denied that he did that, but I heard it for the first time because I did not hear it on Sunday. And I'm like, that sounds like that. Who the heck else would it have been?
Well, apparently his partner, Brian Gumbel, last year, I think, had a similar incident and denied it, and they realized that it actually was, you know, some remote microphone elsewhere. And Dierdorf, actually, it was kind of funny. I know you go to ProFootballTalk.com sometimes, as
good
do
site.
I. And there was, I think, Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com actually spoke to Dierdorf.
Yes.
Whether he was speaking to him just about this or not, I'm not sure. But he quoted him on this incident, and he said, look, I'm offended that you would think it's me. I'm a former offensive lineman. You're insulting offensive linemen anywhere to think that my belch would be that weak and it would be that hard. He was like, clearly, if I'm sitting this close to the microphone, I'm insulted that you would think it would
you're
be
gonna
me.
You're going to do it. Make it count.
Make
right?
it count.
Absolutely.
Make it count. You
make
know?
It something that everybody's going to talk about.
Keep so the recording of, right?
So when I read that, I laughed at that one. That was a good one. But, yeah, what was the, is that what we were just talking about? What were we, how'd you get on that subject?
You choking.
Oh, you're me choking.
Yeah, exactly. Although you could just suck down the soda right there, and then you could belch like Dierdorf, right?
Go with the Aquafina.
Go with the Aquafina. Okay. Then let's kind of, before you have to get off and go back to work, and let's kind of figure out then where you're going with the program. For instance, what's coming up tonight, this week? Do you do anything special? Do you, what kind of things do you look for? Do you have a list of feature ideas? Maybe you can give us a little bit of an idea what it is that you look for when you get ready to produce a show and ready to do a piece in particular.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. We do. I think usually on, let's go with tomorrow. We
Wednesday,
go back to the practice field on Wednesday. Yeah.
Right.
Back in the locker room, you know, the usual gearing up, basically turning the page to the next opponent coming up, which is the Cowboys. So should be an interesting week on the show. We usually have John Hanna in around the end of the week, only for home games, though. But he gives some good perspective on the team and everything. And then we have Perlo in again.
Yep.
Brian's usually got his lowdown, you know, an interesting fact or whatever the case may be around Friday. And we always give the weather, the lovely whatever weather report I come
accurate
up with.
Weather.
Yeah, accurate
I like
weather.
That.
And one of our favorite features.
I am a meteorologist. We all know this, right?
Yes. Absolutely. One of our favorite features is each day when Christine and I sit down and chat.
We do chat.
We do sit down and chat. I mean, a little,
lucky you, Brian.
Might be
lucky
very
you.
Boring,
absolutely.
But, you know.
No, it's, that part's the best. No, but.
Boring.
Yeah.
But we, you know, Mondays, obviously, it's all about the previous game, and it's all about, you know, covering that game home and away. You know, we're on the road and, you know, obviously at the home games and, you know, in the locker room and everything like that. And, you know, we're having a lot of fun, and Christina especially with some of the features that we've had. And you've already been out, and some of these are also with some of the other programming we do, Patriots All Access. But, you know, Christina, you know, in the offseason was out with Junior Seau out in San Diego and Lawrence Maroney in St. Louis. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and, that's great.
Yeah.
Great trips, yeah. It was actually, I guess, my first couple weeks up here.
Yeah.
And I jumped on a plane and took advantage of the
gig.
Summer,
yeah,
the
really.
Off-season. Yeah, right? You want me to go where? Okay.
San Diego?
But, San Diego. Within 24 hours, I think we were out there and back, but it was really cool. It was a great story. It was on our web show, I think, last week.
Yep.
So go check it out. But he's a great player to do a story on, so we brought that
so
back.
So you'll do some more things like that,
yeah,
then, perhaps? And
definitely. And cool. With the holidays coming up, we're going to cover, you know, we try to cover all the stuff that the players do in the community. They do a lot of things outside
that's
of football.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that fans really appreciate. So we try to get that on there. And today I think we started a new thing. You could go on and vote for the top play of the week, just a little bit more interactive stuff. Go on and watch some highlights that we have from all the games because we do tape everything, we cover everything. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun things to look for. And I guess with Dallas coming up this weekend, the show should be pretty intense.
Will you travel with the team?
I do not travel to games, no.
You do still, though,
I
right?
do, yep.
Brian
I'm going to your country. I'm going to John Rook country this weekend.
Go to Fort Worth for the barbecue. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Do whatever you can. Go to Fort Worth. Dallas sucks.
Yeah?
Yep.
Anywhere in particular in Fort Worth?
Oh, yeah. Go to the Cattleman. Go to
the
stock. Well, just ask somebody to go to the stockyards.
Boring!
No, it's not. Believe you me. I could take you to the Fort Worth Stockyards, and you would be thanking me for the rest of your, you know, on earth, earthly life, what I could show you at the Stockyards in Fort Worth.
Wow.
Trust me.
Can you come with us and
I would
you
love
know, give
to.
Us a little tour?
I would love to. You would eat, you would drink, and the sights are also pretty good. Okay, Gary? So there you go. All right?
Oh, what sights are those?
Just sights.
The sights.
The
right.
The actual cattle going down the street.
Right. Looking forward
website
to that.
Website
sights. Yeah. Now, we are – the bottom line, though, is covering the team every day. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a comprehensive show. And the bottom line, though, is if you want to know what's going on with the Patriots on that particular day, we're the place to be. And, you know, that's the beauty of the web. You can – wherever you are, wherever you're listening to us now.
Anytime, anywhere, right?
That's right.
Cool.
And we have fun with it and, you know.
What's the most fun thing you do about the show thus far? What's the most fun part of your job maybe overall right now? Many are long, but just it has to be something that you really have enjoyed or you really like or look forward to.
Going on the radio with John Rook.
No.
No?
No.
Not your favorite thing, Brian.
Oh.
My favorite thing.
Yeah, that's good. Good point.
Well, first of all, just covering a great team.
Yeah.
I mean, a winning team.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. Just, you know, the energy is there. The players have the energy, you know, hearing what they have to say about it. And just, you know, the stories that we tell, I think, are a lot of fun, whether it be where a player grew up in his hometown or what they did, you know, serving kids in the community and what they do off of the field. I think that's a really important aspect. So I appreciate bringing that to fans because, you know, we cover all the football, but, you know, to really add that extra perspective, I think it's cool to
have
that.
That's a story that just gets lost a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, so much negativity does come out when something bad happens. But, you know, there are people that really want to know what are the good stories. You don't talk about the good stories enough. And I think that's one of the advantages that we have here and with, you know, your program and a lot of the stuff that you do on Comcast, especially that you have a chance to spend some time on these things with these stories that maybe the TV station down the street or the radio or the newspaper don't always pick up on.
Keep it positive, yep.
Well, you try to. Yep. And plus, the fact is that, you know, the cycle isn't all about, you know, negative things going on. There are also good things, but we all know that negativity sells. It always does, mm-hmm. and that's just, you know, what – but you have to include some of the other to make you appreciate it, I think,
right.
a little bit more.
No, there's no question about that. And, you know, fortunately – fortunately around here there's not a lot of obviously on the football side of it, not a lot of negative right now. And
yeah, no.
You know, you look at some of the other NFL teams and you're like, wow, one thing after the other with the off the field stuff. And you know, fortunately there haven't been a ton of those around here. Not a ton of them. You never know what you get, but you know, for the most part it's a pretty solid team to cover.
You got an email from a fan in Orlando here, Christina.
I did. Oh.
Christina, not you.
Fantastic. Let's hear it.
Jimmy in Orlando says, hey, look at this. Good looks and a Patriots Gator fan. What more can you ask for? I thought I was the only one.
Really?
How about that?
Wow.
She's hot, too.
Now there are.
Thank you, Gary.
Now there are two of you. Two wow. Patriots and Gator
Good
fans.
To know.
You and Jimmy in Orlando.
Good to know. Wow. Thanks,
and
Jimmy.
Jabbar Gaffney probably, and too. Jabbar I Gaffney? Think he's a fan of both.
Yeah, you would think
you know,
that
he might
be.
Chad
yeah.
Jackson might be a fan of both. Maybe. Not Rishea Caldwell.
Not any longer.
He's
anyway.
Only a fan of one.
Yeah, not
right.
any longer.
He's not a fan of the Patriots, is he? He's a Redskin. Why would he be a fan of the Patriots?
Probably true. Thank you for spending a little time with us today.
Thanks for having me in.
Will you come back and do it again?
Definitely.
We should do some college football. It would be fun. I would love to talk about the virtues of the SEC versus the Big 12. I'd
Sounds
love to get
good.
Into that.
That's always a good conversation,
See?
Right?
All right. Bingo. All right. We'll take a timeout. Christina? No. It's never, never boring.
Come
ever,
on, give us a good
ever,
one, Gary.
On
give us
point.
A good one.
This is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Newman.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Newman!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the Revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
We continue with Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. And Bill Belichick coming up in 10 minutes for you. But thanks to Christina Acra for joining us.
Let's find out how old Brian Lowe is.
Well, if he can get this one. You know this theme song?
Oh, that's right. That's what we do.
Yeah, we played this game on Tuesdays. Every
yeah,
once in
no,
a while,
I
Brian.
Remember a couple weeks ago, yeah. Can't say I do. I'm not going to say that I...
Three words. Cop show.
Three-word cop show?
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm familiar with the show, but...
Did I tell him?
See if any emailers have it before you leave.
Is this the first playing of it, or are we...
It's the first time we played it today. Okay. All right. If you know the name of this theme song, email us. Webradio@patriots.com.
And make fun of Brian Lowe.
And you can make fun of B. Lowe.
Yeah, bring it on. We'll be the first. And
his relative youth.
I just turned 29.
Well, then you should remember this.
I probably
You're
do,
old
but
enough
I,
to remember this.
I'm sure I remember the show. I'm sure I'm familiar with the show. I just didn't put the theme song to the name.
This was about, was this 20 years ago? Was it 20 years ago?
Yeah, at nine, I wasn't watching cop shows.
I got one you might know.
Uh-oh, here we go.
There you go. Well, that's what I'm watching now that I'm 29.
Yeah, exactly. You have to.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about the Cowboy game last night and watching the end of it, and I mentioned to you that I was actually going back and forth with watching the Cleveland-New York game, and then I saw the Cowboys were down by, you know, 7. They were down by 10, 17, 7. I turned back. They're down by 9. And then they missed, you know, and it was 24-13 when I checked. And I said, all right, I guess, you know, and I had just seen that Romo had thrown his fifth pick of the day and had responsible for 6 turnovers.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, well, I guess it's not in the cards. But although primarily I knew that it was Buffalo. And I turned it back on last night just in time, right before they scored the touchdown. And so I watched, the last 20, 30 seconds of the game?
Yeah, well, the last 20, 30 seconds of the game.
Of the game
took
clock,
about 12
anyway.
Minutes.
Right,
exactly. Real time. It was just such an improbable way for that game to end, because if Buffalo was not going to be able to win that game, then you really feel bad for them. They're not going to win any game. I mean, they dominated defensively and special teams-wise. Their offense didn't do much, but, you know, you get 5 picks in a game, you return 2 of them for touchdowns, you have another kickoff return for a touchdown, and you can't pull it out. I mean, I just enjoyed watching the reaction shots of the two owners. That was enjoyable. Jerry Jones and Ralph Wilson.
I love Jones. I can't believe we won the bleeping game.
Right.
We won the bleeping game.
We won the bleeping game. Usually he's down on the field, though, isn't he?
Most of the time, I think he's usually only down on the field when they're kicking somebody's ass.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
I think he's that kind of guy, and if they're losing, he ain't down there, you know?
But how about Buffalo? First Monday Night Football game at home in 13 years. And, you know, they start out so strong. They're winning the game the entire time. An exciting game against an undefeated team. And then just dagger in the heart at the end.
By the way, three emailers come right up with it here. Okay? Hill Street Blues.
Oh, okay.
And the other one was other one, Jason in Dallas.
Are they all making fun of me for not knowing?
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
And Jason Dallas says the cartoon was the Smurfs.
Oh, the Smurfs.
Yeah, this is Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
Huge cop show in the 80s.
Sure,
on, you know,
but I wasn't watching cop shows in the 80s.
Oh, come on. You knew about it.
I told you. I'm aware of the show. I wasn't watching cop shows in the 80s.
There you go. And there's a fourth email. Hill Street Blues, damn it. So there you go.
B-Lo's an idiot.
Just goes to show you how many older people we have in the audience. Although that's all right. I mean, this was 20
years
ago.
You didn't have to be older to know this side. You only have to be 12 years old at this point. Right?
That's all you need to be.
That's all you need to be.
So in terms of, you know, being able to, you know, be resilient, you win a game like that after turning the ball over as many times as you have and coming off of a short work week, do you think this benefits the Patriots in any way coming up next Sunday?
I was thinking that, you know, as I'm watching that game and, as the game is progressing, I'm thinking, well, there's a pretty good chance the Cowboys are going to lose. I'm thinking, wow, from the Patriots' perspective, yeah, that can't be a good thing. I mean, the Cowboys, you know, no team wants to lose at all. No team wants to lose twice in a row. But when you lose on Monday Night Football in that kind of way, when it was, you know, mostly your, you know, you lost because of turnovers as opposed to just two teams just playing equal – I was thinking this could could be trouble for the Patriots. Now I'm thinking that maybe still could be trouble for the Patriots because are the Cowboys just riding that wave? I mean, for the most of that game, they're they're kind of down in the dumps, and then at the end there, I mean, you see Wade Phillips going nuts, the whole team going nuts, and rightfully so, and then they're probably sky high as they're flying home, and they're probably just eager to get right back into it, get back on the practice field tomorrow. It's hard to say really how much momentum plays a part in any week to week NFL scenario, but I think they'll be riding high. I mean, I think they're now thinking, wow, we got through. Those are the kinds of games that you look back on and say, wow, we made it through that one. That was a big one for us. And I think it's an interesting question. I don't know what it's going to mean, but I think it could mean that the Cowboys are riding pretty high.
Well, I think also that the fact that the Cowboys are going to be 5-0 and there's only three teams now that are left unbeaten in the league, that will certainly catch attention down the hallway. And I think the Patriots will certainly respect that fact. And the fact is they're going on the road and they're playing a team that has a very good offense, and then they'll know that, hey, they did struggle a little bit and they still managed to win the game. So all of that is stuff that you sort of need to consider here, and not take for granted, I would assume.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be taking, teams for granted, whether they're 5-0 or 0-5. But, I think that, when you think about, being on a big NFL stage and, we're moving along through the season and there aren't all that many unbeatens. And there's definitely some pride on the line as far as, continuing the rank of the unbeatens. And, Tom Brady after the game said, hey, these players don't like to focus on the record and anything like that. But, Brady was like, yeah, we're 5-0. I mean, it's pretty good. You can't be much better than that at this point in the season. And he's right. And, I think knowing that they have this game, against an unbeaten potentially a couple weeks from now with Indianapolis, and, things will start shaking out a little bit more. There'll be some of that undefeated pride on the line, sure.
Do you have any concerns at all over the performance against Cleveland?
Any
nitpicks?
Well, until I see certain things become a week-to-week trend, I mean, certainly we can nitpick, but I don't think it's going to be something really to worry about. I mean, their third down offense was pretty poor.
Two for 12. Yeah,
but the previous week they were, 7 for 12 or something like that. If we see 2, 3, 4 consecutive weeks of really having trouble on third down or finding themselves in third and longs, then I'll say, there's something to worry about here. I think offensively they're able to, if Lawrence Maroney isn't playing, Sam Morris step right in. If Randy Moss is being shut down, all right, Dante Stallworth, Benjamin Watson, we're going to find them. I don't think there's much to worry about from a trend standpoint. Like that's where I would be concerned if we start seeing trends. But there's not a lot that you can nitpick here. I mean, they're still keeping, they're keeping their turnovers down offensively. Right. The sacks, it's unbelievable. I mean, I was looking yesterday. They have a combined 5 interceptions and sacks. A combined 5. That's one a game. When you think about, if you go through a game and you only have 1 interception, you only get sacked 2 or 3 times, that's a pretty good game. They've had 5 total through 5 games, and Indianapolis actually has the same amount. When you're keeping your quarterback upright and you're forcing turnovers defensively and you're containing teams and special teams, there's no glaring holes anywhere. I don't think there's too much that you have to be worried about. Was it a real efficient, smooth performance? No, they didn't look all that good in the process, and Cleveland might be sort of a surprise team, but there's no glaring area that to be worried about at this stage.
Right. All right. Why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown on Patriots today?
Yeah. The focus today a little bit about about Randy Moss, sort of Cleveland being able to keep some extra eyes on him, hands, feet on him, and that allowing, Benjamin Watson to be wide open a few times with Dante Stallworth. And we're just sort of looking at that dynamic, which for the first time, Randy Moss did not have a huge breakout, jaw-dropping performance, yet the Patriots offense was still able to perform pretty well. So kind of focusing on that, and also talking to Paul Perillo, as we were talking about with Christina, touching on a few other aspects of the game, the junior Seau, Teddy Bruschi, platoon situation is one way to put it, and they both had pretty solid games as well. And just kind of starting to turn towards the Cowboys, because I think it's going to be a fun couple days of covering this team. And this is one of the, some weeks, we're always focused on the Patriots. Some weeks I like to really keep an eye on the opposing team, website and the opposing team newspaper coverage and all
Right.
This is one of those weeks. When the Patriots are playing the Jets, I love reading the New York papers. This particular week, I'm really eager to, see what the Cowboys' perspective is, and specifically what some of the Cowboys players are thinking about this matchup.
Read the Dallas Morning News,
yeah,
the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. There you go.
So I'm excited about these next couple days and covering the team, and then definitely excited about the game. This is definitely a game to circle on the schedule.
It'll be a good one, and we'll have to find you a good restaurant to go attend.
Please do. When we get off the show, you'll give me the little guidebook for Fort Worth.
Thanks to B-Lo and Christina Acker for joining us. We'll have to get her back on to talk some
college
football.
Absolutely. I'm excited
about
that, too.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick upcoming. We'll have same Pat's time, same Pat's channel right here in the playbook for you tomorrow.
After looking at the game this morning, I think it was pretty obvious that what we saw yesterday was validated on the film. We we certainly had a lot of problems with some of the things that the Browns did schematically. And, they did a good job, game planning wise. They created several problems for us. They got a lot of good players and created some matchups that we had trouble with. Fortunately, we were able to make enough plays. Turnovers are a big part of it to be able to come out with more points than they did. I thought that was a big drive we had in the fourth quarter. And we had a lot of time in possession in the fourth quarter. We were able to, kind of regain control of the game from a score standpoint. But, from a competitive standpoint, without the turnovers, it was, obviously very competitive with both sides making their share of plays. And I guess you could say both sides giving them up. So, but fortunately, we were able to, have those turnovers and not give the ball away. And that, I think, was ultimately a difference in the game. And so now we're looking ahead to Dallas. And we know what kind of football team they have. And they're very good at everything, and that'll be a big challenge for us going down there and competing with the Cowboys. They're doing an outstanding job of, I'd say, pretty much everything from the tapes that I've seen so far this year. So that's where we're at today.
How closely, Bill, are you going to watch tonight's game to try to get a jump on preparations?
Well, we'll take a look at it, but I mean, TV scouting's. You don't really get too much out of it, to be honest with you.
Why is that?
Can't see enough.
So you don't bother with the TiVo rewinding it as it's going along or anything?
Well, there's not enough people on the screen. Usually there's just, a guy with the ball or a couple guys, and you just, from a coaching standpoint, you really need to see the overall, scheme of how they're playing and, who's where, and it's just, you don't see that on TV.
How did you feel that the coverage teams did against Cribs? I mean, he was, I think, almost 10 yards below his average on kickoff returns.
Well, I thought we had our moments. I thought there were a couple that we covered pretty well. There's a couple that we didn't. I think we can do a better job. They're good. They're good, no doubt about it. But I thought at times we were okay, at other times not so good.
Did Dean offer any insight into him having coached him in college? I know as a quarterback, but...
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, I think we knew him. I think we were well prepared for him. But he's a good player.
What is it about Romo that he got so good so fast? What have you seen from him?
I don't know. We never played him, so... Well, I mean, it's not like he was in our division or, he was a regular competitor of ours. The last time we played him, he wasn't the quarterback. So I don't really know. I couldn't, trace the history of his development and so forth. We're just not that familiar with, that NFC team. We play him every 3 years. But he's very athletic. He's, he's a playmaker. He finds ways to get the ball to – all his receivers, good on play action. He's very mobile. He's very competitive. He's a tough kid. So, I think he's very accurate down the field. Sees the field well. I think he's a good player. I just don't feel good about talking about his history because I really wasn't there for were involved in, you know, hardly any of it.
I imagine he's on your priority list, though, this week, if you're preparing the team.
Oh, they all are. Yeah, they all are. I mean, offensively, they got the most physical offensive line I've seen in a long time. Tight ends are good. Backs are good. Receivers are good. Quarterback's good. Everybody's good. They're good on defense. Good in the kicking game. Well coached. They're tough. They're physical. They're explosive. They're fast. They're strong. They're big. Got a good football team.
How many plays does Romo make out of the pocket in terms of throwing the ball out of the pocket?
However many he needs to. He can stand in there and throw it. If he gets flushed out, he can flush out and make them. So he does what he has to do. I don't think he runs unnecessarily. I think he runs when he feels pressure or when something forces him out. But if it doesn't, he'll stand in there and throw. So.
Looking at yesterday's game, what happened that allowed Vince to be untouched? I can't imagine that happens very often. Was that something he saw? Was that a breakdown? What's your vantage point on that, on his sack?
We had a lot of people up on the line of scrimmage. I guess they probably didn't block it the way they wanted to block it.
Is it wrong to think it's pretty rare for someone Vince's size to be able to get upfield untouched like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there was somebody, some way he was supposed to be accounted for. I'm sure somebody made a mistake over there. I don't know exactly what happened, but, you know, when you walk people into the line of scrimmage, you've got to make a decision offensively as to who you're going to block and who you're not. And, you know, sometimes that can be a little bit of a guessing game. It could be a communication issue. Depends on what your rules are, whether there's sometimes there's a gray area in the rule depending on what the defense does. So I don't know exactly what happened, but there are a lot of people up there, so somehow it's probably some kind of miscommunication or somebody misidentified the look.
Now, after having a chance to take a look at the film on Rodney, how close was Rodney to the regular Rodney?
Well, I think Rodney did some good things. I think there's other things he, you know, needs to work on. You say that about the whole team, guys that have been out there and been here for the last however many weeks. You know, I think there were some things that were okay. There are other things that everybody could use some improvement on, starting with me, coaches, all the way down. I think there were, you know, plenty of things that we can do better collectively as a team, and that certainly includes me and everybody else, and I would put him in that category too.
For a veteran guy, I mean, he's such a veteran and such a smart guy. Is it maybe a little bit easier for him to come back after 4 weeks of, you know, without activity than someone who doesn't have his stature in the league?
I don't know. Doesn't really make any difference. Just deal with what we have. So it's Rodney. He's in the situation that he's in, and he's working hard to be ready to go best that he can. And so that's really all he can do. I don't think he's doing a good job of it, but I don't think somebody who hasn't been here for 4 weeks is in the same position that somebody who's been here for 4 weeks and practiced every day and played in the games and been in all the meetings is. It's just not the same. You know, it's nothing against anybody. It's just the way it is.
Bill, on one of Teddy's sacks, it looks like he was lined up over the tight end to start, like he'd have him in coverage. Then he had a clear path, then he went to the quarterback. Is that a? Does he have an option on that play? Like, even if he's supposed to be in coverage, he can switch up himself, or does it have to be called ahead of time?
Well, usually, if a defensive player has an offensive player man-to-man coverage, then there's basically two things he can do if that player blocks. One would be to rush the quarterback. The other would be to stay back and stay in the coverage lanes on the defensive side of the ball. So those are basically your two options when you're a man-to-man coverage.
So he just read that and picked those.
Yeah. Well, again, that's what else would he do? He's got the guy man-to-man. He can either, if the guy blocks, he can follow him into the line of scrimmage and, you know, maybe they block him, maybe they don't. Or he can back off and give as much help as he can to somebody else, but he's still responsible for that player man-to-man. So if he checks out later, if it's a screen or something like that, then he still has to account for him. I mean, he just can't really just go run and double somebody else unless, because that guy eventually gets out, then you would have nobody on him. So that's pretty much what every man-to-man coverage, that's what every team has to decide. Each player has to decide. It's maybe not the same for all players or all teams how you want to handle that.
How did Russ hold up in place of Dan Coker?
I thought Russ did a good job. They did a good job.
Did Steven look comfortable his first game back?
Could have done without the penalty, but I thought Steve did a solid job too. I thought overall offensive line did a pretty good job. We had time to throw. We ran the ball okay. Wasn't perfect, but it wasn't bad. The quarterback didn't get hit a whole lot. And we had made some yards in a running game. We should have made more. We certainly had some more opportunities to make plays in the passing game that we didn't make for one reason or another. But I thought overall it was a decent job by the offensive line.
Did the loss of Lewis affect your game plan for attacking them, or did you notice that they changed?
Well, I think it's just a different style of runner, you know, between Lewis and Wright. Yeah, I think it was a different style of runner. I don't think they changed their plays, and I don't think that, or their formations, I don't think there was a lot of fundamental changes. You know, he's in the game all passing situations anyway, like the pass he caught. The angle route he caught out of the backfield, he probably would have been in there anyway, the way the game went. We played almost 40 plays of sub-defense, so I think that he probably would have been in there for a lot of those plays as the back anyway. Maybe not all of them, but, you know, quite a few of them. So we didn't really change much in terms of game planning or anything. What we had to do is be more aware of his kind of loose play, speed on bounce out plays, things like that. Not that Lewis doesn't have speed to bounce it out, but he's just more of a downhill runner. Cutback runs, bounce out runs, you know, a little bit more involvement in the passing game when he was in there. But again, those are the two guys we prepared for anyway.
It's kind of similar to the last week's situation with Rudy not being in.
Yes. Yeah, very, very similar. You know, I think Watson and Wright are similar. I think Rudy and Jamal are both similar. In terms of being downhill power runners, you know.
Mm-hmm. Bill, I know you don't like to look in the past, but the Super Bowl against the Eagles, what T.O. did, how much do you admire that? How much do you respect that, what he did on one leg, basically, against you guys in that game?
I thought he had a great game. We had a lot of trouble with him. Thought he did a great game. Played well.
Does anything stand out? You know, just the build up to that game, you know, was he going to be able to play in a bad leg? He was a force that day.
Yeah, he had an outstanding game. I mean, I think we've all seen him do that before, so it wasn't like we've never seen him run fast or break tackles or, you know, get inside leverage type coverages and stuff like that. I mean, we've seen him do all that. He just hadn't done it in a while, and he came back and did it very well in the Super Bowl. So we see him doing it again now. We saw him do it, you know. That's his style of play. He's very good at it. He's, you know, he's a deep threat. He's tough underneath. He breaks a lot of tackles. He's strong. He's physical. And he's fast. So I don't think there's really anything new there. It's just he's our guy to handle.
Coach Phillips,
you know,
can you give us a little insight on his style or his management style?
He's been a head coach, you know, how many times? Like four?
Buffalo last
year. Right, Denver. So, but, you know, I think he's a very his teams are well-disciplined. I think they're fundamentally sound. They don't necessarily run the most exotic things. But what they do well, and they're very good at it. They're physical. You know, we certainly saw a lot of his defense last year in San Diego. and through the years, you know, whether it be at Buffalo or Denver. And I think that's consistent. You know, he's got his style of play, and it's they're tough, they're physical, they're sound. They don't give you much. You got to earn it. You know, you got to block them. You got to get open. They don't, you know, blow a lot, make a lot of mistakes, and give you a lot of easy plays. You got to work hard for what you got.